This is the Quality News Network. Republican Senator John Warner says it's time to pull at least 3% of the U.S. troops out of Iraq by Christmas. However, Army Major General Rick Lynch, commander in Iraq, says the enemy would quickly retake the terrain that coalition troops have fought hard for. In Iraq today, one U.S. soldier was killed and four wounded in combat. Last night, al-Qaeda in Iraq militants attacked a police station. In the subsequent two-hour battle, three people were killed and 14 arrested. In Afghanistan, three British soldiers were killed when a U.S. airstrike was called in by their patrol, which was under attack by the Taliban. U.S. and British officials expressed their deepest regrets to the dead soldiers' families and loved ones. Sudan is accepting weapons in defiance of a U.N. arms embargo. Two Western diplomats have been ejected, and they're revising the death count in the four-year-long conflict in Darfur from 200,000 to just 9,000. All this is ahead of the 26,000-strong U.N. peacekeeping force due to arrive soon. When he finishes his 17-year sentence in Miami in September, former Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega won't be a free man. France wants him to come over and serve time for a 1999 money laundering conviction obtained in absentia, and his mother country wants him back to do time for murdering a political opponent. He prefers Panama. A judge will decide his fate Tuesday. Ku Klux Klansman 72-year-old James Ford Seal was sentenced today to three life terms in prison for his part in the 1964 Mississippi murder of two black teenage boys. Another Klansman that was granted immunity admitted to participating in the crime and turned against Seal. A dozen more similar cases are being reopened by the FBI. Michael Vick has been suspended without pay from the NFL as of today. His admission of guilt earlier today of his role in his dogfighting operation was all the NFL needed to drop him from the league. His actions were found to be in direct violation of his player contract. The suspension now gives the Falcons the ability to go after Vick's $20 million signing bonus. He also faces 5 years in prison and $250,000 in fines. It's a deluge in the upper Midwest as record rains flood entire towns and neighborhoods, and Chicago really lives up to its name as the Windy City. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition finds that fear of new foods may be inherited. The research involved twins who were questioned on their willingness to give new foods a try. In the past year, sales of the so-called morning after pill have nearly doubled. That's after the federal government decision to allow anyone over the age of 18 to purchase the emergency contraceptive without a doctor's order, as long as they have proof of age at the drugstore. The Commerce Department reports that big-ticket factory orders were up nearly 6%. In July, workers have discovered the remains of a mammoth while digging a canal in Florida. One still intact tooth alone weighed close to 9 pounds. The findings are thought to be over 10,000 years old. The FDA is proposing stricter requirements for sunscreen lotions to protect against UVA rays, which are associated with serious long-term skin damage. The Big Mac turned 40 today in celebration. A Big Mac museum has just opened. New applications for unemployment benefits decreased by 2,000 claims last week. It was a great day on Wall Street as the market closed on a high note fueled by news of stronger-than-expected new home sales and more durable goods manufactured in U.S. factories. The Dow closed up 143 points, NASDAQ up 32, S&P up 17, oil up $1.26 a barrel at $71.09. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
We'll be right back. Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 34 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. We are, in fact, live again. Today is Friday, August the 24th, and we are pulling it off again. I have to tell you, there are some nasty, nasty storms in South Florida passing over Guy's area. We have a host, Guy James, near the Tampa area. If you're not familiar with Guy, he does a daytime show. And he's had a lot of hours in the radio. He's a great guy. They're wiping him out down there with storms. It's fairly clear here tonight. We had something roll through earlier, but it's faded away, and things are quiet outside. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And one moment, I need to make a quick adjustment here for the studio. Let's do that right here. And let's see if that takes care of that problem. There we go. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from the past shows, as well as to the chat room, the world's most fabulous chat room. You'll find a link there at the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site. You'll find links to the main site also, where you can find out about all the other shows like Guy James' show. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to locate all of the music that you hear on the show. Again, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. By the way, our friend Ben Birch at White Rose Society provides the streaming services free of charge to the Head On Radio Network, and it's a huge commitment to do that. We have sent Ben off packing on a vacation, a richly deserved vacation. I'm bringing this up because there seems to be a problem regarding the archives for Strictly Confidential as they are located on the White Rose Society site. None of the recent links will work. If you click on them, the link appears, but it will come up with page not found. For now, and it may even be easier for the future, just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find all of the archives there. The links are correct at the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site, and you can go right into an audio stream for any of the previous shows. They are organized by guest there on that homepage. The call-in lines are 1-877, the number 4, head-on. That's 1-877. The number 4 head-on, or that translates into 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, please save the studio a buck by using 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I try to check that during the breaks. If you recall, I was mentioning the fact that a generator was donated to this show so that we could run the program when there was no power, and that, in fact, last night we were running the preliminary tests on the generator. That worked out so well that, frankly, when the show ended, I completely forgot our equipment was running on generator. It wasn't until about 11:30 or so when I started, unplugging some wires and moving some equipment, to sort of put the show to bed for the evening, I realized we were still running on the generator. It was sitting out there under the eave, and it was purring along quietly, completely unfazed. It had run all of the equipment here, the mixers, the compressors, the computers, all of the stuff. It's just a whole list of equipment here. And it was completely unfazed, just purring along on the front porch. I went ahead and shut it down, and it was very reliable. Again, tonight we are also running on the generator. I'm doing that for the next few nights, not because there is no power here, but just because I want to get it past the break-in period, which is about 10 hours, so that I can go ahead and change the break-in oil and it will be ready for long-term use. And again, thank you to the person who donated that generator. It was very kind of you. And again, it's bright yellow, which is my favorite part. And What else was I going to tell you guys? I think the little correction that we made to the audio there made the studio happy. They seem to not be complaining anymore. I think we're coming in a little bit overmodulated. It may be that this equipment here is so happy to be running on a generator that it just turned itself up. It's hard to know. We've been talking in the chat room this evening about Vic and the dog abuse, and he's being put on probation, and all the things that have happened to him, his losing his sports contract, etc., etc. I just have to have a little segment here. I've been meaning to get to it for a couple of nights regarding Dobson, the Antichrist in charge at Focus on the Family. You know, everything that this guy Dobson touches, it's always some sort of show of force. Even in the family, he talks about children who marshal their forces and that they launch their weapons and their arsenal against their parents, and that parents need to draw a line in the sand. And you know, he makes it very clear that he's always looking for a fight. He's always looking for control. It's very typical, really, of the dictator type personality. Dobson uses the very same weapons that all the third world dictators want to use to break the will of people and to break the will of democracy. Pain and fear, that's what they use. And the difference here is that when the dictators in foreign countries do it, they just do it with no apology. But here, the Dobson methodology is to use the dictator's force, but then follow it up with, we're doing it for your own good. We're doing it because we love you. Yeah, right. I want to tell you a little story here about Dobson and a dog. This is how it relates to Vic. You're probably scratching your head. What was he talking about? Vic and the dog and Dobson. Nobody understands me. Don't worry about it. He wrote a book called A Strong-Willed Child. And in it, he describes his physical abuse of the family's pet, a little Dachshund named Siggy or Sigmund. Dobson begins by saying, don't understand me. You know, it's always the love at first. Siggy's a member of the family, and we love him dearly. Yeah, as long as it's your absolute control. And despite his anarchistic nature, he finally taught him a few simple commands. In other words, with great aspiration, Dobson has gotten through to this stupid animal. At least that's the way he thinks of him. In any case, there was a great confrontation that occurred at the Dobson house. Dobson had been away for a little while. And when he got back, Siggy, the little dog, according to Dobson's perception anyway, had become the boss of the house while I was gone. So Dobson comes back a little bit angry at the world and pretty much is deciding to take it out on Siggy. Siggy, you see, at the end of the evening, was sound asleep in the bathroom. Siggy was curled up. He's a little Dachshund, you see. He was curled up on the fuzzy toilet seat. He was very comfortable. He liked that spot because it allowed him to... There was a heat vent right by, and in the wall, actually, it blew out on... And Siggy was happy, and Siggy was warm. Not a problem. You know, but he was trying to use the toilet. You know, if somebody needed to use the toilet, well, you know, put Siggy down, you know. But no, that was not acceptable to Dobson. Dobson had a huge meltdown with this dog. Very typical for a neurotic, rigid bully like James Dobson. He sweats out every tiny little trivial, easily avoidable issue and turns it into some huge battle of the wills, as if that's what child discipline is about, you know. So anyway, he told Siggy to get off the seat and go to his bed. Well, Siggy has a cage that he normally sleeps in, but the cage is in a colder room, and, you know, Siggy wasn't bothering anybody. So anyway, Siggy flattened his ears and looked at Dobson, and Siggy deliberately braced his little paw on the edge of the furry lid. Siggy knew what was going on. You know, Siggy had slept there three or four nights without the jackass-in-chief being home. So according to Dobson, and I seriously doubt this, this is Dobson's justification. According to Dobson, Siggy raised his lips and revealed his molars and uttered a threatening growl. You know, I really, really doubt that. I mean, after all, these people always tell us the truth, don't they? So in any case, Dobson goes into nuclear mode. Dobson says he's seen this mode of operation before, and there's only one way to deal with it. There's only one way to make Siggy obey, and that's to threaten him with his destruction. Nothing else works. And I'm reading from the book, reading from the page. Nothing else works. He went to his closet, Dobson did, and got a belt to help me, quote, reason with Siggy. Now, of course, Dobson never, ever explains why it's essential that the dog sleep where Dobson wants the dog to sleep instead of where the dog wanted to sleep. See, Dobson's behaving like a child, a toddler, who's throwing a violent tantrum when his bedtime ritual, meaning Dobson's bedtime ritual, isn't adhered to down to the very slightest detail, which is, of course, forcing poor Siggy to go sleep in a cage in a cold room. Dobson was upset about this because he's been forcing Siggy to go to that cage for the last 6 years, and now Siggy's interfering with this small, tiny little detail of Dobson's bedtime ritual by Siggy just wanting to sleep somewhere where it was warm and comfortable for a change. And Dobson, as you might expect, with the emotional maturity of a child, threw a violent tantrum. He says from the book, and I quote, "That tiny dog and I had the most vicious fight ever staged between man and beast. I fought him up one wall and down the other, with both of us scratching and clawing and growling and swinging the belt." Oh, I see. Interesting phrasing there. He says both of us. You see, that's in a long string with both of us. He implies here that both of us were swinging a belt as if both of them were armed, as if he were the same size as Siggy, and that he is fighting with an equal. Here's this huge, pasty-faced man beating the hell out of a tiny little dog named Siggy, who just wanted to curl up on the freaking fuzzy toilet seat in front of the heater and be left alone. Dobson says, quote, "I'm embarrassed by the memory of the entire scene." Now, let me assure you, if he's embarrassed, he has reason to be embarrassed. He knows what he did. He understands full well he went postal on that innocent animal. He says, "Inch by inch, I moved him toward the family room and finally got him in his cage. I finally got him to bed, but it was only because I outweighed him 200 to 12. As if he's claiming some sort of heroic act here. This is one sick, sick man. Dobson is absolutely obsessed with control. You know, see, this is what happens when you have this, some sort of a punitive upbringing. And of course, that's what he went through, is what I'm saying. And of course, now he praises that sort of upbringing, and it's for making him what he is today. A lying jackass, I might point out. He's determined to get everything his way, and he and his 200-pound weight shut down that strong-willed doggy by beating him and physically manhandling him. Said it was up one wall and down the other. I'm sure there was some hitting involved. And Dobson goes on to say, "Just as surely as a dog will occasionally challenge the authority of his leaders, so will a little child." And then, of course, Dobson goes on in this chapter to talk about how this is the way children should be treated also. But I bring this up because I have an audio clip I wanted to use. With Dobson's perverted twist on Vic and Vic's abuse of the dog, and Dobson twists it into the whole sanctity of Snowflake, you know, the unborn, how you know, we kick them to the curb once they fall out of the womb, but until then they're holy. And Dobson actually uses this Vic story, this sick Vic story. Basically, he's using the story because he doesn't like the fact Vic got busted, Dobson being an abuser himself. So he's trying to minimize the importance of the Vic story. So it's really self-explanatory. It's a clip from Dobson. And Agnes, if you would run that clip for me. It's called Dobson Doggy, I believe.
If we can judge the heart of a man or woman by their treatment of animals, what can we say about the individual whose heart is cold toward human life? There are many in our culture more concerned about pets than innocent children. A recent case in point is the media's coverage of Michael Vick, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback who is allegedly engaged in dogfighting and the inhumane treatment of animals. As a person who absolutely loves dogs, I can't imagine how anyone could abuse one of them in the way Vic is accused of doing. But the gruesome reports bring to mind the manner in which babies have been dismembered with impunity by the procedure known as partial birth abortion. It sickens me to think of what has happened to late-term, viable babies seconds from final delivery. A child was fully brimming with life before the abortionist inserted a cannula into the head and, without anesthetics, callously suctioned out his or her brains. The head collapsed and a dead baby was delivered. Where was the comparable outrage over this procedure? Where was the demand for an end to this brutality? The silence tells us that many people are more concerned about the treatment of animals than they are about the lives of innocent babies. There is definitely something convoluted here. For Focus on the Family, I'm Dr. James Dobson.
Yes, yes, sir, there is definitely something very convoluted here. The twists, the turns in a psyche like that to justify, to use this as a way to defend and mix it in and stir it up with I love dogs and dead babies, the whole thing is repulsive. And that's not the end of it. That's the end of it with Dobson for the time being, but there's more along these lines. We've got three more ex-gays coming out to apologize to their victims. These are Australian. We have three ex-gays in Australia who have come out. One is Kim Brett, the former Exodus leader, who's the leader of Living Waters and Liberty. She grew increasingly unevil. Well, now that she's apologizing, I guess she did become increasingly unevil. She actually became, though, increasingly uneasy that the things she was teaching was harmful to people. She saw how her clients were frustrated, and no matter how repentant they were and no matter how prayerful they were, it just didn't seem to take. There's a Wendy Lawson, who's also a former Exodus ministry leader in Australia, and she says that she's aware of only one person who went through the entire program who's now living in a heterosexual relationship. You see, that's what they'll do. They'll claim they're ex-gay, but what they mean is they've renounced their sexuality altogether. Ex-gay does not, my friends, mean the same thing as straight. It is an entirely different quantity and value. She said all the others have abandoned the program, and she is apologizing. A third person, and interestingly enough, these are three women, Zavani Pitts. She too had a ex-gay ministry set up, and it was based on the Living Waters program in Australia. And they took lesbians and gay men through the intense 6 months program, but she noticed it just didn't work. And at this point, she is apologizing, and she concludes that, I'm sorry about the people I took through the Living Waters program. My intentions were to help you, but I acted in ignorance. There's also a survey regarding this ex-gay movement that's out. Of course, it's being completely doctored to reflect the wishes of the Institute, the Recovery Institutes. The questions are overly simplified. In other words, it requires very basic responses to very complex questions. You're not allowed to do any detailed explanations. The report is shown to about 100 to 150 participants is the latest information on it. The data was collected by phone calls, and scientists are saying the methodology is very, very weak. They're claiming that there is a 30% rate of persons in this Exodus program who are experiencing change. This is Alan Chambers, by the way. They're also going on to say that
30% references are is also the equivalent of what Alcoholics Anonymous, their recovery rate. They're trying to equate themselves with AA. Of course, AA is, of course, free, and this program costs you your life savings. Chambers estimates that 30% of those who seek to switch orientation succeed, and 50% abandon the program, and the other 20% go back and forth. He says that's the same ratio as with Alcoholics Anonymous. I bring this up because the Family Research Council has, as I told you a few evenings ago, now launched a lobbying campaign. They're handing out a DVD in Washington in addition to meeting with the various senators. They're mobilizing, what they're calling mobilizing the body of Christ, and they're approaching Congress and telling them, we don't need gay marriage, we don't need Don't Ask, Don't Tell to go away, we don't need the hate crimes legislation because this is a matter of choice, and see, we're curing people. A lot of people are completely unaware of this movement, but that's what they're telling them, so it's completely blurring the lines in Washington, D.C. amongst the people who don't know any better. In their tiny little minds, they are saying that the hate crimes laws are going to be used to censor their anti-gay rhetoric. And the Family Research Council also drags out a bunch of ex-gay activists. One is a woman named Christine Sneeringer. We're going to hear her as part of the audio clip we're about to run. She's the founder of Worthy Creations, or a member thereof. She said, I would not be able to share my story. Well, you'll hear this. But she's talking about if the hate crimes legislation is passed, she won't be able to share her story that she has recovered homosexual. And we've got a couple of co-opted African-American ministers to try to make the link that civil rights and gay rights movement, it's disgusting. It says the gays are trying to hijack the civil rights movement and make it their movement. Oh, if Dr. King could only hear this, he would turn over in his grave. All people. One day, all people. Lord have mercy. The Family Research Council is in this clip. It's part of the DVD, as I said, that's being passed around through Congress, and it's part of their lobbying effort. They're concerned that hate crimes legislation will not let them operate their for-profit and nicely profitable operation of curing gay folks. You'll notice during this audio clip, they never say they're straight. Never once. Never, never, never. Does not mean the same thing as straight. There's a minister, a black minister, who takes great issue with us by saying that gays have never suffered. Well, honey, take a walk in my high heels one day, why don't you? Take a walk in my pumps and see about never suffered. They hate your outsides, they hate my insides. What the hell is the difference, other than the obvious difference? You want to talk about compared pain? Well, you know, maybe we could do that. I've never met, you know, any black folks who were hospitalized to change their color and given lobotomies and shock treatment. There's another minister who's going on about, I never saw a homosexual water fountain. You remember back in the days of segregation. He said, I remember black and white water fountains, but I don't remember any homosexual water fountains. As if that made any difference. And by the way, I remember the separate water fountains too, sir. I grew up in the South. I remember the separate water fountains at a retail store in Thomasville, Georgia. And I always thought it was so unfair, even as a little boy, because the white folks' water fountain, you see, was one of those wall-mounted refrigerated units. You push the button and the chilly water comes sprouting up. The black folks' water fountain, which was one of the old porcelain style, not that there was anything dirty about it, it was just the old porcelain, unrefrigerated water that came out at whatever temperature the pipes in the building happened to be. I remember white and black water fountains in Monticello, Florida. I remember going to the doctor in Monticello as a little boy. Our doctor was in Monticello. There were separate black and white waiting rooms. And I remember noticing as a little boy, I didn't think it was really fair that the white people got to go in much quicker than the black people who were waiting in the black folks' waiting room of this split doctor's office. You walk in the front door, the blacks went to the left to that waiting room, the whites went to the right, and the office section was in the middle. And of course, the windows, the office section had, you know, the sliding windows, you know, where you can open them up and talk to the people who are waiting to see the doctor. On the white folks' side, those sliders were always open, and they were glass. Even if they were closed, they could see. On the black folks' side, they were all made of wood so that you couldn't see through them, and they were always closed. Yeah, I remember all that stuff too, sir, but what the hell's that got to do with discrimination? So I'd like you to run the little Family Research Council clip for me, Agnes. Thank you.
The idea that I would not be able to share my story, my personal journey of freedom from homosexuality, that someday that could be considered hate speech, that's a scary thought to me, that I couldn't share what God has done in my life. And that's why I think this is very bad legislation.
Christine Snieringer, herself a former homosexual, is the director of Worthy Creations, a ministry that helps people leave the homosexual lifestyle through the power of Christ.
There's just an aggression because our voice, the voice of the ex-gay community saying, we used to be gay, but we're not anymore, change is possible. They want to silence that voice. And I think hate crimes legislation would be a part of that silencing, because then suddenly we wouldn't be able to say those things as freely. We wouldn't be able to proclaim freedom from homosexuality or that homosexuality is sin and deviation according to God's word. That would suddenly be considered hate speech.
Critics point out that so-called hate crime laws seem primarily directed at deflecting criticism from the homosexual community. In April 2007, a group of former homosexuals gathered in Washington to oppose the current hate crimes legislation.
If hate crime law is passed, they're telling me that I am more valuable as a lesbian than I am as a ex-lesbian. And I don't think that's true. I think no matter if you're a lesbian or you're not a lesbian, no matter who you are, I think you're valuable as a human being.
There are hundreds and even thousands of men and women that have changed their sexual orientation. And so it is not the same thing as even the civil rights movement or, you know, anything like that. And so I'm here to say, you know, that as a someone who has changed, that this is an important issue.
Indeed, the homosexual movement has attempted to align itself with the civil rights movement, and hate crime laws have been portrayed as a civil rights issue. But that doesn't sit well with some civil rights activists. William Owens is the founder and president of the Coalition of African American Pastors.
I march with Dr. King. I marched for civil rights. I fought for civil rights. And for the hate crime, the people who want a law for the hate crime movement, I find it very frustrating and disgusting, because that was not the purpose of the civil rights movement. And they're trying to hijack and take over the civil rights movement and make it their movement, and they didn't pay the price. Nor do they suffer the things that blacks suffered prior to the civil rights movement.
I'm not only upset about that comparison, I'm appalled at that comparison. It is so different, it is amazing. I remember two water fountains in my day. This is something I lived, where there was colored water fountains, white water fountains. I have never seen a homosexual water fountain, have you?
To make homosexuality the equivalent of race, which is immutable, unchangeable, but homosexuality is not. It is not genetic, it is not inherent, it is not inborn. And I'm living proof of that.
Sometimes I feel I've got to
And speaking of tainted love, let's talk about Matthew Sanchez, male prostitute, Republican, gay, porn star, Marine Corps wannabe, evangelistic Christian, and an Iraq war reporter, and a salesman for right-wing radio, a TV guest, a congenital liar. Well, gee, that all goes together, doesn't it? Before I jump into that, the telephone number is 877, the number 4, head on, that's 877, the number 4, head on, that's toll free. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, that's area code 305-658-3333, rings in West Virginia, and it will save the studio a nickel. And the mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I try to check that during the breaks. We'd love to hear from you this evening. Matthew Sanchez, we talked about him on Bob's show many a moon ago. We've been through so many Republican whores and prostitutes that it's easy to lose track. We've been through Gannon, who was really Guckert. We've been through Sanchez, who uses names also like Rod Majors and Pierre LaBranche, but those are his male whore names, not his evangelical Christian names. We've been through all of the Republican scandals of the men's rooms, the Mike Jones meth and man-ass Haggard. There's a track called Meth and Man-Ass, by the way. We should run that. Too bad I didn't think of the Meth and Man-Ass track. We've got plenty of other tracks, so we'll just run that another time. We do have a caller. Preston is on the line. Preston, welcome to Strictly Confidential. It's good to hear from you, sir.
Hey, Peter. Thanks. I really enjoyed how you broke into that song, kind of right in the middle of that, you know, those clips you were playing from the Dobson Network.
I thought that was very appropriate too. It led, you know, through the whole thing. I was thinking this tainted love. It's got to go to tainted love somehow. Thanks.
I actually visited the headquarters of Focus on the Family several years ago.
Oh,
and,
my.
Why?
I said, oh my, that had to be take a few years off your life.
You know, they've got one of those signs on the highway as if you're approaching a national historic site or something.
And, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. But anyway, I was glad I went to kind of see what it's about, and I was really struck by the, you know, demonization of homosexuals in the literature, how they carry diseases and stuff like that. Again, right out of the Nazi playbook. In fact, the Nazis actually, they picked up a lot of their propaganda techniques from U.S. pioneers in the public relations industry, people like Edward Bernays. He wrote a book called On Propaganda, and Joseph Goebbels had that book and many others, and spoke about how he was such a fan of this Edward Bernays guy.
I'll be darned. I wonder if that propaganda film, I think it was called The Eternal Jew, if that was based. It went through all the points in that book, like the disease, the things you just mentioned. There was
maybe I'll have to try to check that out myself. I actually saw one of the documentaries on Nazis and homosexuals in Nazi society, and it was called Paragraph 175. I don't know if you know that one.
I saw a movie called, it was some paragraph or another, and it was a three-digit number. I bet it was that. And, you know, I cannot remember how that movie went, except to say it was something about if you say you're gay, you're not gay, or something about being, how did that work, Preston?
You know, I'm not exactly sure on the specifics, but it had something to do, paragraph 175 was the part in the Nazi penal code that basically, it criminalized gays, basically. And from that, the identification tags came, the pink triangle. I was unaware where that symbol came from before. And, yeah, it just made their lives hell in what was before a very, you know, open place. It was very sad to see the shift that took place when they took power. And
I completely agree. There was an issue, too, that a lot of people who went into the prison camps that were charged with various crimes, things that had become a crime under the
well, for instance, being a Jew was a crime under the Nazi regime. And, of course, the very few people who were rescued from those prison camps when the invasion took place, there were not very many, mind you, but the very few who were, any charges that were placed against them by the Nazi regime were erased from their records. In other words, the charges were considered to be, just ridiculous, just a way to get them to the prison camp. Unless, of course, that charge was that you had engaged in a homosexual act. They left those charges, even though they freed them from the prison camps, mind you, they still left the charges in the book. That probably had something to do with 174, I betcha.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I read that, something about that on, I think, Wikipedia, about how they remain criminalized for so long. And some other countries are doing that so brutally now. I heard a story, I think, in Uganda. A lot of gay rights activists were going to fly into Uganda during some public convention they have going on there and use the media attention they're getting as a platform to argue for gay rights in Uganda. And the president's very against it. He's a very authoritarian guy who I'm sure uses these sorts of lines that Dobson provides about, saving Western civilization and traditional values, and the authoritarian structure is what he's trying, and what these figures are trying to save. And I'm so glad you brought up the issue of the parenting. I was unaware that stuff isn't it. What's the title of the book you were reading?
Let's see. I have the title right here. One moment. It is a cup here. It's called A Strong-Willed Child. Now, I don't know if that is the same book. It very likely is the same book because it has to do with raising children. The Strong-Willed Child, that it's a bestseller, it says here, that Bob references when Bob is talking about Dobson saying that you should shower naked, a father should shower naked with his small son, that would cure the child's curiosity and that he wouldn't grow up gay or some rigmarole, and
right.
Beat them till they cry. Yeah, that was the other recommendation I remember.
I it's interesting you bring that up. I just came upon another book that's kind of the antithesis of that. It's called Unconditional Parenting.
Wow.
Yeah, by a brilliant guy named Alfie Kohn, Kohn. And he's done a lot of previous books on standardized tests and in the schools and the way we're instructed in the schools, oftentimes also following authoritarian patterns and pressuring for conformity and stuff like that. Well, he took that scholarship and he started to see it in families more and more, and his own started thinking about it more. And basically, the description of the book, I'll just read a couple sentences here. Most parenting guides begin with the question, how can we get kids to do what they're told? And then proceed to offer various techniques for controlling them. In this truly groundbreaking book, nationally respected educator Alfie Kohn begins instead by asking, what do kids need, and how can we meet those needs? What follows from that question are ideas for working with children rather than doing things to them. I mean, this still applies to our foreign policy as well.
Very good point. I don't want you to miss Michael Bronski. I bring that up because what you're saying reminds me. Michael Bronski should be joining us this coming Tuesday evening. He is a prolific author, and his new book, it's not released yet, it's called The World Turned Upside Down, The Subversiveness of Children's Literature. One of the things he's going to be getting into, I believe, is children's toys. You know, this huge pressure for parents to be sure that the boys play with the Ken and all the concern when there's a crossover.
Yeah.
And Michael is pointing out, they're just toys! Let the kid pick the toy you want. So that should be interesting. It reminds me of what you're just saying is the reason I bring it up.
Yeah. I went to your website, and I noticed that Michael Bronski was going to be an upcoming interview. I was really glad to see that. I've been reading him off and on for a while.
Really?
I've been a subscriber of Z Magazine for a while.
Interesting point. I should tell you that I came across Michael because of a Z Magazine subscriber who listens to this show and wrote to request him. That's great. And in fact, Z Magazine is how we came across him.
Networking. That's great. We've got our own networks, you know.
Yes, we certainly do, Preston. Yes, we do. To their confoundment, we do.
Great. I noticed an interesting article in the newest issue of Mother Jones magazine, which is also very much connected to the issues we've been talking about. The cover story is titled School of Shock: Food Deprivation, Isolation, Electric Shocks, Inside the Taxpayer-Funded Program That Treats American Kids Like Enemy Combatants. And it goes into some of the authoritarian schools we have developing. I haven't read that article yet, but I did notice another article called Gay by Choice, and it posits that our sexuality is, at least potentially, or in some people, it can be kind of fluid, and there can be an element of choice in it. And it's a very nuanced article because he goes into some of the political implications of that. It could be negative, but he also sees how it can be helpful as well. You know, not defining it as either or, either you're born with it or you choose it, but some mix of those things oftentimes. Sometimes the either or for people, they just are born there. And they're comfortable there throughout their lives. But there are people who choose, maybe they have some traumatic event in their lives with a person of another sex. So, but they still want intimacy. And, you know.
Very good point. Yes, it is a very good point. And things are not always as black as white and white as we would like them to be. I think one of the issues that that bisexuals have with this the Christian right is they're always saying that that bisexuals are really just are really acting out their homosexual lifestyle. In other words, the religious right does not want to give way to the middle ground you just pointed out. It's one or the other.
Yeah, and even on issues of marriage, they're very demanding that marriage be defined as one man, one woman. I've heard, you know, Sean Hannity, Dennis Prager say that over and over and over again. And it's like, why? I mean, maybe it's not your thing. Fine. But, you know, some Mormon communities, it's worked out okay. You know, they always get caricatured, too. And the pedophilia issue comes up immediately, oftentimes. There can be an element of truth to it, but oftentimes, they're pretty healthy relationships, you know. And in other parts of the world, there have been people with multiple spouses, usually multiple wives, but not always. Sometimes it's multiple husbands.
Yeah, or multiple concubines, if we go back far enough.
Yeah, yeah. And it has its good points and its bad points. You know, it's a mix, you know, these relationships. But to try to forbid them, you know, by law, you know, all these laws they're devising now and putting on various, you know, state constitutions about this stuff, and yet they're doing what they're always talking about the other doing. It's that enemy out there. They're the crazy ones. The Taliban and their fundamentalism, and they don't like women. Okay. And how do you talk about the women who advocate for their concerns in this country? They're feminazis to these people. It's amazing.
It is amazing how low we've gone. And having grown up in the 70s and being young and in the ideals and all the hope we had, it is very disheartening to see this great turnaround. And I have to wonder sometimes if it's the lack of the draft and I think that maybe has a lot to do with it. The fact that the young folks are not as involved as we were And quite frankly, if there wasn't a draft back then, the young folks may not have been as vocal as they were then. But certainly reducing taxes and no draft during a war is a write-off, isn't it? It's the painless way to go. It's and I say I give that a lot of the credit, if you will, for what's taken us to this level.
Yeah, you know, and it's also, you know, U.S. troops over there. You know, whenever we get bring home the troops, and we hardly have even begun to mount an opposition to bringing home, or a campaign to bring home all the troops that are there, including all these mercenaries from other countries like Chile and South Africa, El Salvador. How many of them have been killed? How many of them are doing a lot of killing? It's amazing.
Yes.
But it does feel like there's been a regression in many ways, and I think there's a lot of truth to that regarding the environment as well. Just there's like an ecocide going on. Simultaneously, though, you know, there's the apocalypse story, and then there's the Genesis story too, which is about, you know.
Yeah, they want to control the beginning and the end, brother, and the middle too. It is under very close supervision, is it not?
Yeah, but anyway, at the same time as we're seeing all this regression, there is a lot of progression. You know, I went into that Dobson headquarters, and they had this big, like, panel of the United States, and when you push the button, all of the Focus on the Family radio stations would light up.
Oh, my God.
And this board lit up at 2,000 lights, and I was like,
oh, Lord.
And, you know, it's global as well. But I'm also seeing copies of The Advocate all over the place, and I'm hearing stories about gay activists flying from Europe to Uganda in a show of solidarity. And I saw Janine Garofalo. She narrated a really good film about the scope of the global gay rights movement. I think it's called Coming Out in Dangerous Times, something like that. And personally, you know, and I kind of hesitated bringing this up to you because there's a part of me that is ambivalent to people knowing or not knowing. But I think I may have misled you in an earlier conversation. I'm not gay myself, but I try to be a good friend.
Honestly, I didn't know. I didn't know, Preston. Of course, it crossed my mind. I wondered, but I didn't know. I hadn't made any judgment along those lines. I really just didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, I really don't know why I felt the need to say that. But I don't know. I just kind of did.
Well, why not? Why not? You know, it's that's one of the uncomfortable truces about gays and lesbians staying in the closet so many years. In this whole dialogue about who's what and identifying oneself, it didn't happen years back when think right. So it's perfectly part of the normal dialogue these days.
Yeah, and what's, you know, taboo to talk about or not talk about, you know. But, yeah, maybe I just wanted to kind of out myself as a heterosexual.
This is a great place to do that. If you could say it here, brother, you could say it anywhere.
I did live with a gay man for a while. He was the brother of a lady I was living with, and a beautiful, brilliant man for sure. And I don't know. Sometimes I make it to the gay pride parades. We had 200,000 people here in Denver.
Wow.
Yeah. And again, that's what I mean by the real progress that's been made in the midst the rest. This year, actually, I didn't go downtown to the parade, but I listened to kind of a broadcast of it on the local Air America affiliate. They have a gay-friendly program on the weekend.
Cool.
That's quite good. So, yeah, you have a lot of allies on the airwaves.
Well, this is a good thing, Preston. And I have to be honest with you. Living in the South, I don't always see the. In fact, I rarely ever see the idea of 200,000 in a gay pride parade is astounding to me. And
yeah.
I guess I should get out more.
You know, wherever you live, I think people feel isolated at times. Really, I mean, it impacts us for sure. And you know, for a whole variety of reasons, we kind of feel isolation. Some just by our own observations, but other times, you know, there's certainly an effort to kind of impose it to demoralize us and make us feel that, to weaken us, and you know, divide us. What you were talking about earlier, how like the co-opted African American preachers doing what they're doing to stir up resentment against the gay community.
Yes. One of the ways they're doing that, by the way, Preston, is to tell them that one of the points in the gay agenda is to replace the black folks who have worked and struggled so hard to get into government, that they want to replace all those faces with gay folks. In other words, we're after their seats in city councils and in congresses and in senates, et cetera, et cetera. That's one of the threats they're putting across.
Do you happen to remember the name of the gay man who was such a pivotal figure in the civil rights movement, a close associate of Martin Luther King's, and you know, one of the people behind the scenes to organizing the I Have a Dream March on Washington? I think it was like Runyard something.
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't realize that until not very long ago that Martin Luther King and that this man may have helped write some of the speeches, and honestly, I don't recall the name, but he was very involved, and honestly, quite frankly, I didn't realize that until, you know, doing something like this. I do a lot more research than I used to do, Preston, and I'm finding out things I never knew.
It becomes quite a paper chase, I'm sure, but that's great. That is wonderful. Period of growth, and it can be a struggle, though, too. Keeping up with it all, I have to say, you know, we all fall behind their propaganda, and you know, the way they're pitting African Americans against Latinos now. There's actually an African American host in Los Angeles who's, you know, just every fear tactic and pumping up the gang wars. Again, there's elements of truth, but they'll take an ounce of truth and create a pound of deception. So he's talking about gangs and MS-13, and it's a, you know, genocide against the African-American community and so on and so forth. He'll even say things like, these Mexicans, they're having so many kids, they're pumping them out like rats and chickens. I mean, he is using, exactly the sort of language that the KKK was using, that actually a lot of the right wing was using against, you know, the welfare queen caricature of African American women. And now here's this guy taking that language and using it against some of the least among us. And not only is it crude and bigoted, but it's inaccurate. Mexico happens to have developed over the past couple decades a very progressive sex ed program and providing contraception against, you know, what the Vatican was saying they should be doing.
That is a very positive sign, considering the very high level of Catholicism in Mexico.
Yeah, and that Catholicism, it can still be very useful in people's lives, and as sacred, people can have very constructive and, you know, helpful relationships with their with their faith, but there, again, there are always elements of it that are trying to impose some authoritarian order and, you know, the constant struggle to just overcome these things again and again as they pop up. Oh, but I began to say, actually, trying to keep up on all the propaganda can be such a challenge. Every technique imaginable. And recently it's been this issue of, what did Michelle Obama say about, was she referring to Hillary Clinton? Did you get on that controversy?
No, I'm afraid not, Preston. They're pitting the wives against one another.
Yep. Again, that same pattern, pit people against people. And in this case, there was a clip of Michelle Obama saying, and me and Barack realized that if you can't keep your own house together, you don't belong in the White House. And then that was it. And then they go to the anchors and they'd say, wow, was she talking about Hillary Clinton, the wife of worldwide known philanderer Bill Clinton? You know, tune in at 11 for more gossip.
Yeah.
Well, the rest of the clip made it clear that she was talking about her own family and her own need to work on her own family and spending time with them, even though they're on this incredible schedule, flying all over the country, doing all these talks, and everyone recording every thought coming out of your head. I mean, the distractions and investigations into the whole family that go on forever. But anyway, she was talking about me and Barack, we make time for our kids. So it wasn't about Hillary Clinton at all. And the people who are putting this out there know this. And
yes, this
I watch and listen
me.
To these people, and I'm like, you people must hate American people. You must hate humanity.
There's something terribly wrong with a psyche that operates in that mode of when they realize they're in a position of information power to intentionally put out propaganda. There's something intrinsically and at a very basic level just plain evil.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's the word for it. I really do.
By the way, our production chat is telling me that the person's name they think that was involved with Martin Luther King was Biard, B-I-Y-A-R-D, I think it's spelled.
Okay.
That may be the person we were looking for earlier.
Yep.
And you're right about Mexico, by the way. You know, I was just mentioning the other evening that Mexico has now instituted, conjugal visits in prisons for same-sex relationships. And I'm thinking, Mexico? I thought Mexican prisons were supposed to be, you know, like, what was the movie with what's-his-name in it? You know, the, who knows, the drug...
Like the Turkish prison.
Yes. That
Midnight,
guy. That
Midnight Express.
Thank you. I go rather vague sometimes.
Me too.
I mean well.
Me
yeah.
But, I heard you bring that up, and I was glad you did. And I've been thinking the same thing for so long. The way you phrased it too. You said something like, you know, here in the United States, you know, we think we're all that, you know, and we're the leaders of democracy and we're number one. But, you know, there are things going on in the rest of the world that they're proud of, and that's progressive. And, yeah, the conjugal visits in Mexico, and there are unions forming of prostitutes in Colombia.
Really?
And there are some constitutions being drawn up that respect the rights of indigenous people. Mexico also passed a law encouraging a multilingual society and respecting how much we have to learn from some indigenous languages. In fact, there are languages, and this is common, but this one called Amaya or something in Peru, and the way it's constructed, it lends itself to providing space for the nuance that sometimes we lose sight of sometimes in our own speech.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up about the indigenous people. I believe in Mexico, that's in southern Mexico. There are a lot of, and aren't they of Peruvian ancestry? And I think they live in constant threat of of law enforcement, and they're kind of excluded. Am I getting that right? It seems to me I read that.
Yep. It's, you know, it's like an indigenous Holocaust in many ways. I went to Peru, and I met some indigenous people, and, you know, on one side, they've got the timber companies coming at them. On the other side, there's the oil companies, and then there's plans for a giant dam that will flood out hundreds of square miles, killing all these species as well, you know, all their other relations. So again, it's the 11th hour, to borrow a movie title.
Yes, and we are in strange times. I think that's from, who knows? My references fade as soon as I bring them up. But yes, we're living in strange times. We truly are.
Yeah, for sure.
I have an article here, by the way, I was going to mention later about Uganda. If I got far enough down the stack, so it's good that you brought it up. The folks over there are facing regular abuse, and being gay is punishable by life in prison. And there's a representative, Victor Juliet. She's head of, in fact, she's a transsexual, and she's just saying, our message is simple. Just leave us alone. Just let us live in peace. For God's sakes, just leave us alone.
I'm sorry, where was that at?
That was Uganda.
Okay. You know, I think Peru has been, you know, when these states get created and these governments getting bribed and stuff, there's certainly been repression there of the gay community. Although I did go to this town called, it's right on the edge of the Amazon, and it was such a beautiful place. The gay people were so openly gay, and the young communist group was out and with banners and doing some kind of labor protest. And
really? Wow.
Yeah. There was street theater, and everybody would pile into these plazas every night and just walk with their families, eating ice cream cones or, you know, listening to the music being played. And I was like, wow, this is like an advanced civilization for sure.
Well, how true that is, because things that should not matter have been brought to such a high level of prominence by attaching it to things that actually do matter, in a twisted sort of way, the way things are interlinked. And, you know, where it's, you know, it's maybe truth, but, you know, when you have truth that has just a little dash of BS in it, you know, you could stain the whole batch.
Yeah. There is one last point I'd like to get to. I keep speaking of how hard it can be to keep up on all this, all the information, and there's that whole debate about what did Obama say about Clinton.
Yes.
The thing that made me think about that a lot was that I'm a subscriber to Media Matters. And they analyzed that, and they noticed that Laura Flanders on MSNBC said, yeah, it's true that Obama was talking about Hillary Clinton. So, you know, she misspoke. And, you know, if she were to see the rest of that clip, I'm sure, you know, she'd recognize that. But the thing is, that kind of concerned me, is that, you know, not that we shouldn't, you know, criticize ourselves and we don't get things wrong, and, you know, we need that. But I hope that when people receive this email, and I'm just one of tens of thousands of subscribers they get, I hope they don't take this bit of information about Laura Flanders and, like, you know, judge her by that moment alone. You know what I mean?
Ah, yes. There's such a tendency to take a snapshot and make that the whole picture, to make it easy. A soundbite justice.
Yes, exactly. And actually, that's one of my critiques of the organization, Media Matters. And I'm a huge fan, and I send them money. But I think it would be helpful to to see some good things, you know, regarding media matters. You know, it's not just the mistakes of people, but, you know, they have good moments, a lot of good moments. In fact, even some of the right-wing people, they're very critical of, say, for instance, this one host named Gunny Bob in Denver. And I disagree with him 80% of the time, for sure. But his format's very open. He welcomes debates, and he'll get, you know, he can get excited, but he'll let people speak. And so, I don't know, I think credit is important, even on the right-wing side of things. You know, so often, you know, we're just seeing the problems, but we have a lot of, you know, moments of, you know, commonalities.
It's about time. And in fact, if we, these moments of commonalities, as you put it, if they're our only hope, we can't live like this.
Yep. Anyway, I'm sure you have more information and more good music to share with us.
You can always count on a couple of disco records in the stack somewhere, Preston. That will always be the case, yes, sir. That's sort of like the sun coming up and chickens crowing. There will always be another dance track around this program anyway. I'm so glad you called.
It's been my pleasure speaking with you. And
you too.
Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you, sir. Good evening to you, Preston.
You too. Peace. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was our good friend Preston in Denver, the fellow who told us about the wonderful movie called Small Town Gay Bar, which I think our friend Kate might be seeking out when she heads south to Mississippi to help with the hurricane cleanup again for the second time. Not that anything has been done down there by the administration. Everybody's having to do it themselves. But anyway, I'm hoping that Kate can do a report for us from the small town gay bar. We have caller Jim on the line. I think we still have Jim. Jim, are you still with us?
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Welcome, Jim. Welcome to Strictly Confidential. You found the right place. Good evening, buddy.
Well, during that last caller, I managed to download Windows number 7 update. That was quite interesting. You know, as far as this business of social engineering is concerned, and I'm not speaking from any pulpit here, but as far as social engineering is concerned, hatred is not a valid component. It simply isn't. I mean, you
good
saw
point.
What did for Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, right?
Yes, we certainly did.
And these people who will get so upset about partial birth abortion and the cranium of a baby being crushed, but they would not yet support legislation that would prevent the cranium of Matthew Shepard from being crushed by those assholes who killed him.
Good point. As our friend Bob puts it so succinctly, after you're out of the womb, you're kicked to the curb. You're on your own, buddy.
Well, I just don't understand hate. I just don't understand, because hate is something that just destroys you. I mean, it really just it's like a malignancy. And it will destroy the body politic, or in which it is allowed to be a living component. But there are so many people who want to hate for any reason they can imagine. And these people have the nerve to call themselves Christian, or to call themselves doing something for other people when they hate somebody or marginalize them.
Yes, it's always the position of ignorance. It always comes from a position of ignorance, because in order to ever understand other people, or if you don't love them, at least respect them and allow them to breathe the same air, you have to do some research. You have to learn things. In other words, that takes work. But the easy fallback position is just to hate. It's not only immoral, it's lazy.
Well, it's just unproductive. It has no valid component in any program of social engineering, as I existed originally. It simply doesn't. And it's waste. And we don't have time for that kind of waste in our society today. We have too many other problems, too many other valid things that require our attention. And it really disgusts me. And people can enthuse about it. They can think out loud about it. They can occupy time about it or whatever. But, you know, I like to be Alexandrian in my approach to just cut the Gordian knot. And I say, eliminate this type of situation. That's just the way I look at it. Sometimes I see the world in, well, Goethe once said that life is green. Sometimes it's gray. Sometimes I see it in terms of black and white. And from what I hear about Reverend Dobson and the dog and then showering naked with his son and then talking about this abortion thing and then decrying any effort to prevent anti-hate crime legislation from being enacted, it doesn't pass the common sense test with me. It's not efficient.
No, sir, it does not pass the common sense test. And the only way that that stuff gets passed is there's a huge populace that will only get its news from the pulpit and from the Christian bookstores and from Christian radio and Fox News. And they are a done deal. They're a captive audience in that sense because they have this feeling that it's evil to go outside of that, that you're venturing into the liberal, and it, even a worse word to them, Jim, other than liberal or even gay or homosexual, is an intellectual. Boy, they hate that. The intellectual, because I think they feel mentally challenged by people who are able to think, because obviously they're not.
Well, I've never felt that situation. I'm not saying that I'm the most intellectual person in the world, but, you know, I'm smart enough to realize that allowing the few short years that I'm allotted on this earth to be consumed by these feelings of hate for anybody, for whatever reason, are simply, you know, it's a waste of my time. It isn't efficient. It's totally non-productive.
Well, I have to agree.
Can't we use our efforts and our prodigy to promote other and more productive programs?
Well,
I would just like to see
the
energy that is devoted toward hate toward people for any reason channeled into medical research or social engineering to bring people who are very poor at least into a reasonable standard of living.
Good point. If the thousands and thousands of man hours and woman hours that went into producing something like the Wingnut Daily or the Family Research newsletters were channeled into something productive and real, it would make a huge difference.
Well, you know, it's just like that thing from Gone with the Wind when Rhett Butler was talking about the South and its efforts to defeat the North. And he just said, you know, the thing that disgusts me about all this is just waste. It's just stupidity. It's waste on these so-called lost causes, which will never be resolved. You know, the only way to resolve them is to simply just look at the situation squarely and head-only and say, look, is this helping or is it hurting? And if it's not helping, to hell with it.
Well, that is a good point, Jim. Oh, if they would only do that. If the world woke up one morning, what if those 2,000 radio stations that lit up that Preston talked about when you push the button over at Focus on the Family, what if they all started telling the truth one morning? What if they all told the truth one morning that there's no reason that you can't accept evolution and Genesis, that there's no conflict there? What if they told the truth that morning?
Well, I think it'd be wonderful. I think it would be the dawning of a new age. I really do.
Wouldn't it, though?
I mean, you know, I don't have time to worry about creationism versus evolution. It isn't important to me. The fact is, we're here. And I think the two are reconcilable.
Of course they are.
But
Absolutely. You've
got these people who will labor like scholars of the pedigree of their own ignorance, yet most of them assholes would simply have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh, that's so funny. And the pedigree of their own ignorance. Very well done. Yes, and they would have slept through. But, you know, if Jesus were gay, the Sermon on the Mount would have been a musical.
Right through
they would
the Sermon on the Mount.
They
wouldn't have slept. They would have been the ones who have been snoring so loud you couldn't have heard the Christ.
Yes, and the example of Jesus was always that government bad, people good. Pharisees bad, people good. You know, it's pretty simple if you just look at it.
I mean, mean, you know, it has as much theatrical appeal to me as U-Tars and Me Jane. I don't care. It doesn't interest me. People are people. And the like the late Tammy Faye Messner once said, God didn't make no dirt.
Good point. She was remarkable.
I want to press this again. And this film, Urbania, U-R-B-A-N-I-N-A, with Michael Futterman and Alan Cummings.
Thank you for mentioning that again.
That is equally important as the other films that you've talked about, and it needs to be seen.
I have to write this. I'm so glad you brought that up again, because I wrote it down last night and then promptly misplaced the sheet of paper in my stacks of what I did and what I didn't do. Urbania. So
it came out in 2000, and Michael Futterman was... he was also in the remake of La Caja Fall. He played the part of Laurent. And he also was a contributor to the film Capote. And so he has not only found his niche as an actor, but also as a screenwriter. He's a very, very talented individual. He's a straight man from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Really?
Does a superb job with that film.
Yes,
he certainly
Capote,
did.
Capote was certainly a good film. I enjoyed that.
And one more thing. As far as the Third Reich is concerned, in Article 175, another thing that I think you people should see, and it's a film called Conspiracy, and it deals with the Wannsee Conference on 20 January of 1942, in which 14 members of the Nazi hierarchy met with Heydrich, Himmler's number two man, and they planned the final solution. And it's well played, starring Kenneth Branagh and Stanley Tucci. And if you will see how these people sat around a table and planned the extermination of 11 million human beings by the process of industrial combustion, it will absolutely stagger the imagination. Now, that's the product of hate. That's the product of attitudes that are being expressed in this country. The spirit that was expressed by those 14 men. And I want you to look up Wannsee Conference and read the minutes of that meeting. I want you to do that for me, okay? W-A-N-S-E-E-E.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind emailing me that, because that would be helpful to jog my memory, just if you wouldn't mind after the show.
Okay, if you would ever read it and see how these people could sit around a table over a very sumptuous meal in a beautiful home in the suburb of Berlin that was formerly owned by a Jewish merchant, and see the impact that it had on the world. The Wannsee Conference. Only one copy survived. It was top secret, and Eichmann was the co-chair of that meeting.
Wow.
And I mention it only to just talk about this business of hate, of bashing anyone for whatever reason, for whether they're gay, straight, black, white, fuchsia, I don't give a shit, what color, or whatever. We don't have time for it. Life is too short.
Very good, Jim. I completely agree with you, sir, and I'm at a loss to change things. I sometimes wonder if I'm helping or hurting by telling these stories that I tell.
Well, I think you do more good than you know, and I appreciate what you're doing. I really do. And that's the reason I call your show. It's because I think you're doing a good job, and I think you're trying to cast light on things that need to be illuminated, and people need to be made aware of these things. They really do. And so that's the reason I support your show, and that's the reason I agree with you.
Thank you. As I said once at a show a while back, it's not that I'm the smartest or the prettiest one in the room. It's just that I was the one crazy enough to do this.
Well, I think you're a very intelligent man, particularly to be able to do what you do with the electronics and everything like that. I mean, your background, you don't accord yourself the accolades that you should, but I will do that. And I think that... and I have a lot of respect for you because, I mean, you in your position could be doing other things much less productive. You could be feeling sorry for yourself, but you're not. You're there every night doing the best you can to try to make the world a better place. And I have respect for men like that.
Thank you,
okay?
Jim. That's thank you, Jim. That gives me hope. Thank you, sir. You'll be amazed how a compliment will carry you through the weekend. Thank you for the Friday night.
I don't give compliments very, very, very often. I don't suffer fools gladly, as you well know.
Yes, sir, I do know that, Jim. That is a true fact.
Well, you take care, and may the good Lord bless and keep you and hold you in the palm of his hand, as our dear old friend Tallulah would say.
Yes, God bless her and the makeup job in the lifeboat.
There you go. Whatever floats your boat, as long as you got a boat so that rising tides can lift it, okay?
That was a good, yes, Bob said that the other night, or was it tonight? I don't know. But anyway, that was a good point. Thank you for saying that. Thank you,
okay,
Jim,
buddy, you have a good evening, and I'm going to get off here because I do believe that brevity is a soul's wit, and I've wasted too much of your time.
Oh, I'm good to go. I'm good to go. I've got hours of steam left, and I'm even running on generator, and the generator's got hours of steam left too, so everything is go here. Thank you for calling.
Okay, buddy.
Thank
you take
so
care
much.
And have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. Good
Bye-bye.
Evening. Bye. And that's our good friend, Jim. And tell you what, I will go into the Matthew Sanchez story that I mentioned earlier. Male prostitute, Republican gay porn star, Marine Corps wannabe, and a cast of thousands, TV guest, congenital liar. Yes, all of those words. But I think that we can... Oh, no, good, excellent. We have another caller. I was going to do one of those bottom-of-the-hour things, but I would much rather talk to Kate. Kate, welcome to the show.
I'd be the bottom of your hour.
Well, you're definitely the bottom of my hour. That's 29, 48 seconds, 49 seconds. Yes, ma'am, you are right here at the bottom of the hour.
I don't know how long my phone's going to last because sometimes I just be talking along and there's nobody there. It just kind of goes away and whatever, and I've got power dipped and stuff, so I don't know. I just may go dark any minute now, and I really didn't want to talk about the bar and all that and Katrina and all that stuff. If I do want to say anybody that's interested in what's going on in Jackson County, Mississippi needs to tune in 8 o'clock Eastern Time. I know, 8 o'clock, what are we here? Pacific Time at KPHX 1480 AM Phoenix. Sarge has a show at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, and Jim Yancey will be his guest on that show. And Jim will talk about what we need and what's left to be done and how's it going and that sort of stuff. So I just wanted, that's a heads up for anybody that's interested in another Katrina story that's coming right from the county, right where it's happening. So anyway, and I just wanted to just call and give you my usual thank you for everything you did this week. It must have been a huge week, and I just feel like you need to get some knowing some energy that's coming back at you. And when I hear those Dobson stories and stuff, you know, I just, and all of the, sometimes I get so angry. I think, oh, praise God, the Mother Goddess keeps me out here in isolation so I can't hurt nobody or myself. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And it's tedious to hear stuff from, in fact, even at church, there will be people who will bring up something from a Focus on the Family mm-hmm. book or periodical, like, and it'll be harmless. It'll be, you see, mixed in yeah. with all this insanity, there's some nice little story about, you know, a child that grew up without his mother, and it's some nice inspirational story, you know, something normal, something that,
yeah.
you know, but yeah. they don't realize, but you see, to me, that announces loudly that not only are they reading that little story, they're reading the rest of it too, and it makes me so angry.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think sometimes I feel so hopeless and so helpless, and then other times I think, no, we just have to hit the streets because I just want to freaking dance, and they just can't take us all on if we're discoing in the streets, can they?
That's a hell of a good point. Very good point.
When I'm chatting back and forth with Glenn last night, I thought, he's so goddamn peaceful, and he's so joyous, and he's so, you know, I mean, he has hope, and, you know, and it's just all about disco, baby.
Isn't he? Yeah. It's like, at first I wanted to say, Glenn, stop that. You need to be more grim. What the hell's wrong with you? And then finally, I caught on the fact that he's just that. He's positive. Some people
yeah.
are, and bless his
yeah.
heart.
Yeah, he's something else. I really enjoyed the show last night for what I could get of it. I had to pull out early because this big storm blew in. And so anyway, I just wanted to call and say thank you for the week. And I just, you know, let's just boogie on. It's pretty grim out there, and there's just no way you can't. All I'm doing is just hanging around, doing whatever I do, waiting on the assholes to all die and, you know, whatever.
Maybe I know, but Kate, I tried that. I was waiting on them to die when I was in my 20s. They never die.
Me too. They keep raising youngins, don't they?
I know. And you would think the youngins would rebel and go all nice, but some of them don't. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, so hopefully, though, those youngins will all get caught up in iPods and cell phones that you can internet on and all that stuff, and they're not even interested in the outside world, so maybe they'll just leave us the hell alone. And if enough of us are dancing in the streets, they'll want to join us. So there you go. Anyway, it is way past the bottom of the hour, so I got to go before this damn phone hangs up. It makes me so mad, so I'm going to go. Just wanted to give you a hug and tell you goodnight. I got to unplug here because I'm really pushing my luck. The lightning is great big. So,
you know that.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, bless you. Stay safe. Stay safe.
I do. You too. It's going to be hurricane season's not over till November, and we're going to be right in the middle of it, huh?
Yes. As a matter of fact, yes.
That's the Mother Goddess taking care of us. She's blowing us all off the planet because she pissed. Ooh, dear me. So, anyway, more later. I'll talk to you again.
Thank you, and thank you so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free, 877, the number 4, head-on. I'm your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Friday on Foxed Up with John Fox at 10 a.m. Eastern, where we'll take a closer look at Jeff Beckley.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
We'll hear from Jeff in his own words, his thoughts on artistic creativity, his jazz influence, and on spirituality.
I'm not so sure that some guy in the sky with a beard baked you in an oven and put his finger in your belly button and that's how you came about.
We'll even hear that Nina Simone track that John Fox mentioned.
Lilac one.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Cushion for Sleep here has been a place for our community, a space where we could all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
to become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And the track that you just heard playing was Ernest Cole, and I am very pleased to tell you that Ernest will be joining us this coming week. Ernest is a rising star in the dance. Well, he's charted. He's got videos. He's big. And Ernest will be joining us. I'm looking forward to that, and that's one of his tracks from Ernest Cole. I wanted to run that as I come back from break this evening too, so you can be ready for Ernest next week when we have the day fine-tuned. And we're looking at bringing many other GLBT artists to the show, the actual performers, as opposed to people like myself and Glenn and even Alex, who play it and know about it. We're going to talk to people who actually do it, like Cynthia Manley. And by the way, one of these nights I'm going to play that Cynthia Manley track that she told us about when she interviewed. If you recall, she said the first time she went on stage, she walked out on stage and she was absolutely floored. There were like thousands of shirtless gay men just cheering and jumping and shouting, and it just blew her away. Want to mention Fierce. We ran the Fierce promo. If you're a GLBT youth of color, please contact Fierce at FIERCENYC.org. They are looking for GLBT bloggers, youth of color, for their site. Also, Billy Shears will please join us Saturday night at 9 p.m. For Billy Shears' show here on the Head On Radio Network. The chat room is open that evening, and in fact, the chat room is open all the time. But we have a nice little crowd here to listen to Billy Shears' musical program, and I have to tell you, it's a wonderful break on the weekend to be able to hear and enjoy his musical selections and stories, as opposed to the things that we hear. Not that we do bad things during the week, but sometimes it's a little more grim, and we appreciate Billy and everything that he does for us on this network. And so that's Fierce and Billy and Ernest, and that's what I intended to do, so I guess I did that. And sincerely, though, Ernest, we are looking forward to having you on the show. I was beginning a rant on Matthew Sanchez, male prostitute, Republican, gay porn star, Marine Corps wannabe, evangelical Christian, Iraq war reporter, salesman, right-wing radio and TV guest, congenital liar. Doesn't that all fit together? Well, you know, these days it does. These days we kind of have come to expect that with all the controversy. This all started back in, well, not all of it, but this particular phase of being controversial started when he accepted an Academic Freedom Award from the same right-wing group whose members applauded Ann Coulter when she called Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards a faggot. And it happened, he became very controversial, or this whole issue started coming up when the gay bloggers stepped forth to reveal his history as a gay porn actor and a prostitute. The Sanchez story caught fire in the liberal blogosphere, and it moved over to MSNBC's Liberal Countdown program, and it was eventually picked up by military publications, including Marine Corps Times, and that caused the Marine Corps, whose regulations excluded acknowledged homosexuals, as we all know, to investigate his background. Now, chances are Sanchez has been discharged from the Marine Corps, but we don't know that for sure, because Sanchez is saying, and the Marine Corps isn't telling, and that's not something that's public.
So anyway, no doubt he's been kicked out of the Marine Corps. Now, this Matthew Sanchez, he has used names like Rod Majors and Pierre LaBranche. He's performed in at least 15 original gay videos. Pornography, of course. You know, isn't that amazing when we use the phrase gay video? Everybody immediately thinks it's pornography without me having to say. And it's because for so many years, that's all there was. You know, lately, though, there's wonderful gay stories and romances and relationships between people and adventures and, you know, all the standard thriller stuff that, you know, but it, with gay characters, just amazing to me, really. That's the gay video. But in any case, he recorded at least 15 between 92 and 95. And when you count all the recompilations, that totals to about 39. He operated a hooker website. He was a whore. He operated a site called Excellent Top while he was still in the Marine Corps. And he prostituted under the guise of No Regrets Massage. The site has been taken down now, but there is an archive of it. The site reads, Excellent Top. It lists a cell phone number, $200 in, $250 out, meaning whether he has to leave his home or not, to accommodate you. There's a Hear My Voice link and a leather page and a fantasy page. And describes himself as 5'11", 200 pounds, 30 years old, and equipment size, which I won't bother to tell you. Oh, and you can have him for the whole day for $1,200, but, you know, anyway. He's being protected, Sanchez is, by Wikipedia. By the way, I'm hearing more and more little grumblings about Wikipedia lately, about some of the things they're doing. That Wikipedia is fiercely protecting him. They have censored any mention of his prostitution and completely minimized his involvement in the porn industry, and he's blocked the input from people who've objected to the falsification of Sanchez's personal history. Sanchez recently managed to travel to the Middle East. He's gained access to American forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he files heavily slanted reports, quote, for the Weekly Standard and other right-wing, well, you know, like the National Review, stuff like that. And the evangelical Christians are, you know, totally gullible on this. They're rallying around him that he's found Jesus and that he has renounced his life of homosexuality. They're his biggest supporters. Now, you know, you just cannot. These people just amaze me. Sanchez is no more a recovering homosexual. This man was out to make a buck. Just amazing to me. I have a sound clip here. It's a clip of Matt Sanchez and someone that Matt Sanchez really ticked off, and a Republican speech about stand up for gay rights and nobody stands up. Some of his movies, by the way, we'll run that in just a second. Some of his movies include titles like Well Hung, Butt Crack Mountain, Everybody Does It, Jawbreaker, Size Queens, and Tijuana Toilet Tramps. And those are just the ones I can say on the air. So anyway, Sanchez, Republican gay porn star, Marine Corps wannabe. Well, he was in the Marines. Evangelical Christian. So he goes hand in hand, if you'll pardon the pun, with Guckert, with his hot military stud hustling whore. He's a male whore. Both are male whores. And now, I stumble trying to explain it. You already know it better than I, how these stories are all different, yet they're all the same. Agnes, please go ahead and run the Sanchez clip for me.
Hey, Ranger. Good job getting out there and telling your story. I'm glad to hear from people who have actually been here. If anyone else has been out here, don't be afraid. I know it takes a little bit of risk, but tell your story. And if you don't tell your story, someone else probably will, and you probably won't recognize it.
You've heard what the media has to say about the war in Iraq. Now hear it from those who are serving there, in their own words. Matt Sanchez, a Marine and student at Columbia University in New York, is traveling the region to talk to the troops.
In the 1990s, he was a performer in adult films under such names as Pierre LaBranche and Rod Majors. In the 90s, he made films such as Call of the Wild, Montreal Men, Man to Men, Jawbreaker, Idle Country, and Tijuana Toilet Tramps.
Matt, I don't care if you suck dick, and I don't care if you get fucked in your ass, but doesn't it seem a little bit hypocritical to run around calling yourself in the reserves and with the military and supporting a party filled with people like this?
Is there anyone here who believes gays and lesbians should be allowed to serve openly in the United States military? If you do, speak up now.
Now, in a correspondence with a blogger that we contacted, Mr. Sanchez acknowledged the porn work, but he did acknowledge that he wasn't exclusively gay. He said he was, quote, bad at being gay. So do you think that makes much difference to conservatives, whether you're good at being gay or bad at being gay?
Well, I don't really care what Corporal Matt Sanchez, a.k.a. Rod Majors, says. You know, this is a guy who is supported by two networks at the same time. The first network was a gay sex network, and he sold his services for $200 a pop and $250 if he had to leave his house. The other network was an ideologically homophobic right-wing network that consisted of people like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and David Horowitz, who used Corporal Matt Sanchez, a.k.a. Rod Majors, to advance their campaign to demonize the campus anti-war movement and academics in general. So he joined up with this right-wing culture war, and he has been unmasked by progressive bloggers as a hypocrite.
Matt, you wrote on my profile, "You're a sissy version of a bully. I did those films to feel superior to people like you. But why even bother? You're very good at lowering yourself." Let me tell you something. Only in the world of the criminally insane, delusional, self-hating Republicans can sticking your tongue in a man's ass give you reason to feel superior to me. I don't care if you fucked Ken Melman, Josh Bolton, Ted Haggard, Mark Foley, Scotty McClellan, or even George Bush himself, or any of the other self-hating, closeted homosexuals in that criminal administration. To me, you'll always be a cock-sucking, hypocritical, self-hating ass peddler willing to work on your stomach to make a buck. And going around selling propaganda for this illegal war and telling lies about little girls coming up to you and calling you a baby killer tells me that you haven't changed a bit. I know after this video that you're not going to like me, but eventually you're going to realize that I did you a favor, that I tried to help you get the truth out, to come clean with yourself. But until then, at least on LiveLeak, you're going to know that I made you my bitch. Because every time you post a video, and every person who sees it is going to remember what I did to you. So I told you that this was going to hurt you more than it hurt me. So how do you like me now?
Whoa, you have never had your beads read till you have had your beads read by that last gentleman who apparently has had some postings from Matt Sanchez on his site beating him up for being a sissy bully. Where's the love? Where's the love? Well, here is the love. Surprisingly not in the Christian right. The love is right here in a song by Holly Near called Imagine My Surprise, tonight's lesbian track.
Imagine my surprise. Love to each other.
Annoys me about gay guys. This annoys the hell out of me. This is addressed to out.com. Question. I recently started working out in the gym, and I've noticed that some guys wearing the tall basketball-style socks with the color stripes at the top. Are those back in style, or do these guys need to realize they don't play t-ball anymore? Answer. Those socks are appropriate at two times. The first being the opening of Little League season, and the second being at a costume party. There's some pieces of clothing that warrant being worn pre- and post-adolescence, and even as a vintage piece, however, these socks are not among them. To be honest, I prefer blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole freaking world. You know, we've got Republicans and right-wingers in every closet, you know. If we're dying in Uganda, you know, every time you turn around, there's another gay bashing murder. And you're worried about the socks? Girls, get a grip. I'm sorry. I just didn't get the fashion gene, and I don't get it. I just don't get it. But, honey, if you're worried, you are so on the wrong channel. Honey, get a grip. At least that would have been my reply. Oh, they would not want me writing a Dear Peter column at out.com. Oh, no, no, no. That would not be cool. No. Socks. You got to be kidding me. And briefly, I want to get this in. This story arrived late in the evening, just prior to the show, in the September issue of Journal of Modern History. There will be an article that reviews historical evidence, including documents, grave sites, etc., that says that homosexual civil unions existed in 600 years ago in France. The article will reveal a strong historical precedent that homosexual unions, or gay marriages, or whatever, existed. And the opponents of gay marriage in the United States are saying, you know, all believe that, you know, it's just a standard nuclear family and anything else threatens it. But the article that's coming up in the Journal of Modern History will go on to say there have been many different structures of marriage. In late medieval France, the term was affairement. And roughly translated, that means brotherment. And it was a legal document. It existed elsewhere in the Mediterranean. And it was a foundation for many types of families. Brothers pledged to live together, sharing the same, and I quote, one bread, one wine, one purse, and that they loved each other. And they were arrangements that they could inherit each other's property and live together. So that's the news flash from 600 years ago. And I am so glad to be with you guys. You mean the world to me, even though you're all invisible. But, you know, so am I. And stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com this weekend. I hope you have a good time there and look over the guests and what have you. And so, in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...